Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. Sometimes it's a good idea to sit back and take stock of what we believe and what we're fighting for when it comes to religious freedom. Is it all about our personal rights or collective privileges? Does the end really justify the means? What's our goal in all of this? I firmly believe that this was on the mind of Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, when he provided the Sabbath sermon at the Sacramento Central Seventh-day Adventist Church in Sacramento, California, early in 2017. His message can serve to remind us all that there is a man, a God-appointed, God-sent, and God-ordained man who should be the focus of all of our activities and passions. That man, of course, is Jesus. And as you'll soon discover, there is power in honoring him as both our leader and our Savior. Lincoln began his presentation sharing some of the sights and sounds he experienced during a recent visit to the so-called Holy Lands of the Middle East. We join him at the edge of the Sea of Galilee. Let's listen.
To go to the Middle East, I found, if you have an open mind, or to go to Israel in particular, is to see the reality of Jesus, the fact that he did exist, to stand there in Capernaum, in the little church there on the side of the Sea of Galilee, the reservoir for one of the driest places on the earth. But there at the synagogue in Capernaum, there's the original floor that clearly dates back to the Roman times and the days of Jesus. Very humbling to realize that Jesus had worshipped there, stood there, looked out on that same lake, very little changed. It was my privilege too to baptize my son in the Jordan and to remember that Jesus himself was baptized. He gave us a model. These are powerful reminders to me of the reality of Jesus. But another thing it was a reminder to me of, and this is something that you might not expect. We live in troublesome times. And don't imagine for a minute that Jesus came in a quiet, pastoral, backwater time. He came in the middle of an incipient rebellion. He came on the cusp of the destruction of a people. When Jesus spoke about going the second mile and things like that, you know, the American Revolution was fought, among other things, over the imposition of troops that were garrisoned in private homes and the affront that it was to have what they more and more saw as foreign troops in their midst. That's what Jesus and his peers lived under. They were an occupied country, just like Baghdad was for so long. And we've seen those horrible pictures of doors being beaten in and people grabbed and hooded and goodness knows what happened to them. That was happening in Jesus' time. And it wasn't just an abstraction that some of his followers were zealots. It wasn't just an abstraction that Judas thought that he could spur him along to rebellion and declare his kingdom. It wasn't just an abstraction that the leaders of the temple were troubled that he stirred the people up. They saw rebellion bubbling on the surface, not beneath the surface. And when Jesus was crucified, it was the time for the Romans to put this man down or the people would rise up. The Christian message indeed was seen as revolutionary, and it flourished amid revolution. And so we shouldn't think that just because we're living in a bad time, that it's going to be bad for Christianity. Christianity can defeat and rise above all of this. When, not if, when martial law, national or local, comes in this country, you'd better decide ahead of time, will you come to church? People, you know, dismiss it as just nonsense. But it is coming. We know it's coming. Inexorably, the decline of our civilization and of our law and order and of all of our mechanisms for stability, economic and otherwise. It's not the end of the world per se. Jesus said there's been wars and rumors of wars from the beginning. But you and I need to decide when the crunch comes and just pulled out of a hat, martial law. Are you going to assemble together? Or will you, as is required, stay at home in no more than two or three? These are the issues that Jesus faced in his time. Remember, whenever a crowd gathered, Peter and John, immediately after the crucifixion and resurrection of Christ, immediately they spoke and a crowd gathered. They were seen as dangerous to the public order. But religious liberty, the right to proclaim Christ's methods, Christ's personality, Christ's reality, trumps all of that, in my view. You know, it needs to be real. I can remember once we had a book publishing committee at the Review and Herald. They'd gotten together to talk about some of the upcoming books, and one of the proposals was a child's book about heaven. And I can remember one of the leaders saying, well, we really don't know very much about heaven. And I said, of course we do. There are many, many descriptions in the Bible. Obviously, the expressions are limited because it's a reality beyond ours, just like the cargo cult people in New Guinea in World War II when the planes came down. You know, this was a bird from the sky, so they made models of birds. But the descriptions are there. It's certain. This is a real place. It's not a, you know, fantastical shimmer or a gleam in someone's imagination. And it's real and palpable and enjoyable, all because of the guarantee of the Lord of that place, Jesus Christ. Ellen White, in Steps to Christ, page 103, she says, Christ and Him crucified should be the theme of contemplation, of conversation, and of our most joyful emotion. A few years ago, I had the privilege, and I don't understand how I got that privilege, to be a guest of a fellow Adventist lawyer who's a political creature of some degree, but I was his guest in the board of a right-wing policy group that met in Colorado Springs. There were billionaires and people from previous administrations, some cabinet members and so on, and it was a heavy-hitting situation. There were about 15 to 20 board members. But the first evening, we had a dinner at Focus on the Family, which was nearby. And after the meal together, Dr. Dobson passed around a document and we all had to sign it. It was a non-disclosure form at that time because we were then ushered into a viewing area and shown The Passion of the Christ, an advanced filming about a year before it came out. Here, these were the wealthiest people in the country, the most politically powerful, in a little room where the whole wall was the screen. They saw the film that was critiqued by many commentators, and most of them said that part of its power lay in the fact that it looked like a documentary. The language was Aramaic. It looked like it was happening in front of your eyes. And I remember, as the story unfolded of Christ's last hours, I remember, and I was sitting on the front seat, hearing the noises in the back from these people. Not sniffles, moans, groans, cries of agonies. And I realized, if I'd never realized it before, the power of what happened in the life of Christ. It's not an abstraction to see your God literally presented in front of you and being beaten and bruised for our iniquities, as the Bible said. It was powerful. And, you know, it's flowed by now, and we've got CG that puts that sort of thing to rest in many people's minds. But I believe the reality of that sort of presentation is unique, and it explains again what you and I should have in our hearts and present to others. Jesus was real. He came. He lived. He died. He will come again. And religious liberty is all about proclaiming Christ. If you can proclaim Him, you have religious liberty. If someone stops you, they've prevented you exercising your religious liberty. Of course, it can't be taken from you. See it as the reality of Christ. It's His message. And we're to proclaim His message because we are His. We don't belong to the United States. We don't belong to our neighborhood. We belong to Christ, bought with a price. And we really need to get on fire. One thing I remember about my father, and I can't emulate it, but I admired it. He couldn't restrain himself. He had to talk about his faith to anybody he met. It has to be like Acts of the Apostles, where it bubbles over from our experience, our excitement at knowing Christ. There's no word against that. I became very enamored in recent years with Christopher Hitchens. I'd read his material, secular material, for many years, and then He got into his phase where he was arguing against religion. I became enamored of listening to his debates. I couldn't fully identify with it because he was a non-believer. He was an articulate, educated man that just argued in a steamroller fashion against any rational possibility of a God or of the biblical truth and so on. You and I can't accept that. But yet, it's humbling to see some of these debates where religious people stood up and debated with him and lost badly. But I noticed something on his debates. Most times, he humiliated his opponents. There were two occasions where he didn't. But on both occasions, they won, if there was a winning on this, because they spoke about what Christ had done in their lives and what he meant to them. There is no answer to that. And there is power in that. You know, the television is just full of all sorts of programs where someone's lost weight or made $1 million and you want to do it too. They're the model that you can follow. And if you can say, Christ changed my life, he set me free. You know, I'm not encumbered by all these, you know, I better be careful because I don't like just arguing against legalism because legalism is a state of mind, not what you do. It's why you do it. But, you know, he can free us from that. He can free us from the Pharisaical arguments that they brought up against Jesus. With Jesus in the life and compelling and impelling you forward, all of those arguments just drift away, and I believe the worldling, the disbeliever, has no argument. And they're brought, as those people sitting there in the dark with that film, they're brought face to face with a reality that they either humble and accept or they reject it and nothing more can be done for them. It's our privilege in these latter days, this time probably just before the return of Christ, but certainly just before the shifting of the, as Tennyson said, the old order changeth. Just look at you young people. You know society is moving beneath our feet. You don't know who you'll meet in the bathroom. You don't know what you will see in the political world. Everything is shifting. You don't know when you go to buy food whether they'll require some chip or just a thumbprint or iris scan. You don't know. Money may disappear because all things are shifting and changing, but Christ remains.
Wow. What a powerful message from Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine. This recording was made at the Sacramento Central Seventh-day Adventist Church in January of 2017. To finish our program today, I'd like to invite you to visit the Liberty Magazine website. LibertyMagazine.org offers many resources to encourage and motivate you as you protect your religious freedoms. Hear this radio program again. Enjoy the many fine articles presented by the magazine. Subscribe for yourself or someone in your community and be refreshed by the wealth of information waiting there. That's at LibertyMagazine.org. Until next time, this is Charles Mills inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. If you'd like more information about LifeQuest Liberty, call Three Angels Broadcasting Network at 618-627-4651 or email us through our website at 3abn.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of liberty burning in your heart today.